happy hour again. It is happy. This is the second happy hour for David Tennant and Catherine Tate, sitting in for Jonathan Ross. And we're joined by Paul Merton.
Paul Merton is still with us.
I'm still here, yes.
Yeah. Can I ask you, Paul, when you were a stand-up, when you used to stand up, did you ever blank out on stage?
I did once. I was on stage very drunk at the Comedy Store. I wasn't booked, so this was coming from another gig after after that show. So people used to congregate at the Comedy Store. For some reason, I went on stage once introduced as Len Badger, who I think was an ex-footballer for Sheffield United sometime in the 1970s.
Was that your idea?
No, I think it was Tim Clark's idea. So I went along with that. And so I went on stage very drunk, and I attempted to speak, and somebody told me in no uncertain terms to sort of get off the stage. And I can still remember just my drunken stupor just slowly turning my head. It took forever to look vaguely into the distance and said, "Who said that?" And that's when a part of my brain said, "Get off stage now." That is the worst possible comeback you could ever use.
Yeah.
Just get off.
Invite
walk.
Them.
Walk, Mr. Badger. Walk. And I did. So I got off within about 7 seconds, but it could have turned nasty if I'd been there for another 10.
Yeah.
We were just seeing your news. I saw you when I was at drama school.
Yes.
With the Comedy Store Players
up
in Glasgow. You came and did you were on
tour. Yes, we've been going for years,
On the Renfrew Ferry.
Ferry, yes.
Which was an actual ferry.
Yes.
That had gigs on it. And you're still doing that? You still do?
Yeah, we still do every Sunday and Wednesday at the Comedy Store. I'm on this tour at the moment, so I'm not there for the next few weeks. But generally speaking, since 1985, we've been doing it twice a week.
And that's the always taking on a suggestion from the audience and
it's the great thing about it is because it's improvised, it is completely new every time. So the games are the same, but it is all completely different. So the joy of it as compared to sort of stand-up that I used to do is the stand-up you're on with five other stand-ups, and there's a certain rivalry going on between you because ideally you want every other comic to do very badly.
Yeah. Not so bad that they kill the audience, though.
No, not so bad. No, they go on after you, but you're the one that's sort of say, whatever. But when it's in a group of you all improvising together, you've really got to have a good spirit, like you're working at a good cast and stuff. So you do the show, you have a great laugh doing the show, then you have the social environment afterwards where you just hang around the bar or whatever, or just go for a meal or whatever. So it's great. I really enjoy it. And that's the reason why we've been going as long as we have in our now sort of 24th year is the fact that it is completely different every time.
And because I remember we went as drama students, obviously, because we'd seen you all on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yes,
and we thought it was, but because we were at drama school where improvisation is part of what you do.
Yes.
But not to the same end as you were doing it.
No, being really funny.
Yes, you have to be funny.
You have to be funny.
It's not enough to say it's improvised.
No.
It's funny first.
But
hopefully.
Is it the same? I remember in drama school you used to talk about the rules of improvisation.
Mm. Always say yes.
Always say yes. Exactly. Don't block.
But it's funny to block, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly it is. But as long as you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
As long as you time that block for it.
Exactly. If somebody says, when we say, a block, what we mean is that, like, we do a scene and let's say you come in and you're a nurse and I say, "Oh, hello, nurse. I'm thank God you're here." And you say, "I'm not a nurse, I'm the plumber."
Yes.
You've got to laugh, but then we're stuck with what are we going to do now?
I used to go and see that probably for about 2 years or something. No, maybe not as much, but I used to regularly go and see it on a Sunday with my friend.
Yes.
We used to go and see it. My favourite ever bit was always the musical stuff.
Yes.
With Richard Rance.
Yes.
Is Richard Rance still there?
Yeah, Richard's there. And he does the music, but he also does lots of the other games.
But he always does it. Yeah, he does. But I used to love, and Josie Lawrence used to sing about anything.
It's funny, they could sort of get a Sondheim. He asked a Sondheim song, and suddenly there was a Sondheim tune that was just, I don't know, he found it on the piano. Amazing.
Yeah, he's brilliant. Oh, that's so exciting. Oh, I'm going to go to that again. I've not seen it.
Yeah, we're still going. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, still going. Every Sunday, every Wednesday.
Brilliant.
Tickets are popular prices.
In your stand-up days, Catherine, were you guys ever on the same bill?
No, I stopped doing stand-up in about 1988, so it was a long time ago.
Right.
A very long time.
Do you pine for it?
No, I did a gig at the Hackney Empire a couple of years ago, just a 20-minute gig for a charity thing, and it felt great and wonderful, but after that, I didn't have. No, it's much better to. I haven't got all the sort of worries about writing stuff. You just turn up. We turn up in Edinburgh every year, and our preparation is anyone got a piece of paper and a pen so we can write down who's doing which? And we never have.
Yeah.
20 minutes before the gig, we never have a piece of paper. And so that's how unprepared and how wonderful it is that you then just go on and out it comes.
I remember also seeing you at Regent's Park Impro in the Open Air.
Yeah, we do that every year, and we also play the Open Air Theatre in Blackfriars, the Shakespeare, the Globe there, and that's an incredible experience because, as you know, there you've got the audience standing up in front of you rather than sitting down. So when you first walk on, it feels very much like a scaffold, and they're there to see you swinging. But that intimate immediacy where you can just sort of talk right into them, and you're talking to the sixth row, and they're standing together. So they're less like an audience, more like a potential mob.
Do people still like? I worry about people standing and still being able to laugh. I sort of think, does it cut down the laughter because they're standing?
I don't think so.
Is it all right?
I mean, things that do cut down the laughter, whether they feel cold or they feel hot or the seats are uncomfortable.
But isn't it true that in recording American sitcoms, for instance, they keep the temperature turned down because the theory is if you're cold, you'll laugh more?
No,
that does seem unlikely, doesn't it? Yeah, I suppose. It's probably not freezing.
They say the Eskimos are the jolliest people on Earth.
Exactly.
You never see one in a bad mood, isn't that right? You never see one in a bad mood.
That's true. But in American sitcoms, don't they bring the audience in even for one episode, a 20 and what... What do they only record 18 minutes, don't they? Because it's got 12 minutes of
I know they certainly do two versions in the same night.
They
get a different audience in. And you get rewrites happening between the two shows.
On the job.
Yeah, somebody told me about the episode, an episode of Cheers, which they sat in on, writing for Cheers, and somebody says, okay, Sam comes in through the door, okay, between the door and the bar, what's his gag going to be?
Wow.
So you're talking about 6 seconds of walk, but he needs a gag for 6 seconds that gets him to the bar. And then, okay, so Woody's when it pays off as well as it does with something like Cheers or The Simpsons, it is just wonderful.
There's just no fat on it at all, is
it? No, it's beautiful stuff.
Yeah, brilliant.
Mm. So much of what you do is. I mean, you're known as a sort of verbal witch, really, aren't you?
You were voted cornered the market in. One of the top 10, weren't you?
Oh, was I? Who was that by?
By close members of your family. No, like alongside Winston Churchill. he didn't vote.
I've been getting a lot of his mail. We do get mixed up. I take responsibility for all sorts of things that really got nothing to do with me.
It's true, Paul. You were voted top witty.
Is that right?
Yes.
Just was it by somebody called Wit Biscuits or something like that? So the biscuit,
just below
the wittiest crunched in your mouth or something.
So, Paul, in a poll last year, I'm delighted to tell you, you were voted one of the 10 greatest wits ever alongside Oscar Wilde, Spike Milligan, Noel Coward and Winston Churchill.
Oh, well, that is extraordinary.
There you go.
I am flattered and bemused.
slightly
disbelieving. So where's my statue in London?
Yes, exactly. Well,
Noel Coward's got a theatre named after him.
It's coming, that's what they're keeping that plinth free for. It's
Trafalgar
Square, it's going to be you.
You'll get a nice leisure centre.
That'd be lovely.
Yeah.
That'd be lovely with one of those pools that has a sort of automatic wave machine in it.
Could
the wave machine be named after me?
Oh, yeah.
The poor American
wave machine.
It's got a nice ring to it, isn't it? Yeah.
Because that's what you do, do you think there's something in the fact that you're now spending all this time and touring silent physical comedy, which is the opposite of what you do?
Because I'm having a news for you, you're sort of stuck behind a desk and you haven't got props and, you know, and it's all improvised, so you haven't worked anything out and, you know, the person sitting next to you may not be, you know, very bright.
Not that you ever show that.
I'm really good. You know, it's a mask.
Very impressive,
my face is a mask.
Who's your least favourite ever?
Least favourite ever?
Yeah.
David,
terrible.
Let me see. I better not pick a professional comedian.
Let me see. You have to be a politician.
I say the worst host we've ever had, unfortunately, was Neil Kinnock. He was extremely slow. He mistrusted the words and he was putting the time in into the middle of a sentence for no apparent reason that had nothing to do with the gag that he was delivering in this way, which never got to the end.
Right.
I think we take about 3 hours. In another dimension, it's still going on. That programme, that recording is still going on.
Whereas Tony Blair, Tony Blair was Prime Minister.
He's a showman.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, I think when John Sargent came on, and he sort of, the first time he was on, and he was made a big impact, he said that five cabinet ministers had congratulated him on his performance, but he wouldn't say who they were. So I think they do watch this show.
Yeah.
So they have to be aware of it.
Boris decided to run for mayor.
Oh,
yes. Success.
Yes, we made him
probably
from kit form.
You did?
Yes, an English sheepdog and a twit, and we put them together. And we got Boris. So I can park anywhere I like in London now. He's our boy.
Yes.
Boris is our mole.
You haven't managed to get back on the show since then.
David, he doesn't need to be on the show anymore. It's what he can do for us. It's payback time.
So it's part of the draw of doing your Silent Clown tour, the fact that with all the stuff that you've done, like with Whose Line's It Anyway, and
yes.
Have I Got News For You, there's an element of pressure, isn't there? And
yes,
it's, you know, it's time sensitive, and you've got the audience there. But here you're in control, aren't you?
And yes, and it's sort of. I think what I so much love about these films, it's the comedians themselves. Buster Keaton's life story. You know, he was on stage from the age of three in an act called The Three Keatons. It was a very physical act. His mother sewed a suitcase handle into the back of his coat to make it easier for his dad to pick him up and throw him across the stage. And Buster loved it. He loved it. In Delaware one night, there was three hecklers six rows back, and the dad threw Buster towards the hecklers, who were heckling at one point, and then they've got a four-year-old coming towards them. And he sort of throw the authorities off the track. He used to sort of dress as a sort of cut-down adult and wear adult's clothes and try and pass himself off as a midget. He absolutely loved his life, and he loved being a comic. And when he went into films at the age of 21, he had so much knowledge of live knowledge of appearing in front of audiences throughout his entire life that he brought that skill and art to filmmaking. And him and Charlie Chaplin, they really sort of worked really hard to make these films work. There was a real sort of, there's pressure there. You talk about pressure. When Charlie Chaplin released his film The Gold Rush in 1925, he hadn't made a film for about 3 years. And people were going to say, well, is he going to still be the funniest man in the world? Is it going to be the greatest picture? Is it time for a Chaplin flop? And he triumphed. And that is the magical thing about silent films, is that for a while, before sound came in, just that they got really good into the 1920s, the lack of sound seems like an artistic choice. It doesn't seem like a technical thing that they couldn't overcome. It seems like, no, this is the best way to make these films. In The Seven Chances, for example, there's a sequence of Buster running down the side of a hill, being chased by all these giant boulders, which in sound terms wouldn't mean you just have him shouting, hey, watch out, or something, but you don't need it. You don't need any verbal, because the visual is just there. And when people are laughing at the visual, they can keep laughing because there's no verbal words to stop them from, oh, what was that? I missed that line. You just keep going with it. So in the end, it's just great comedy that is timeless, which is opposite to what I do. I mean, Have a Good News For You loses its currency within about sort of 5 minutes of being shown, you know, apart from those
apart from that Neil Kinnock one.
Apart from that Neil Kinnock one. Even now he's clearing his throat somewhere just past Neptune. Oh, dear. If you ever come across it in your travels, don't watch it.
It's lovely to see you being so passionate about it. I think this is worth. I think, faithful listener, it's worth getting a ticket and going along to see you palm out and sign.
Well, the people who've seen it so far, they've absolutely loved it. So, you know, any more
coming,
that's great.
Five stars in the Yorkshire Post, not to be sniffed at.
On tour till the 7th of July. There's probably a website to check.
There is, paulmerton.com. I just got it the other day.
paulmerton.com.
Put it for bloke in Ballon Market.
Paul, thank you. Thank you for coming in and talking.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with it, Paul. Brilliant.
Have a lovely Easter.
Yeah.
There's some eggs outside.
When will this be going out, incidentally?
Well, we don't know yet.
We haven't edited it yet.
We don't know.
We'll probably cut this bit out.
Yeah.